That way of Greater Cleveland mobilizes our community to advance education, income, and health. Join us and live united at UnitedWayCleveland.org. All right. It's the – well, we've got a couple of segments that sweep the nation.
Yeah, that's right. Get out your brooms.
After further review – a lot of brooms. After further review, doing that on Tuesdays and Fridays, we call it the Friday Forecast. So our producer today is Matt Fontana, sitting in for our great friend and producer Dave DiNatale, who is actually out in my other neck of the woods, the Buffalo area, for the University of Buffalo game going against Bowling Green.
He tweeted, actually, the game's being played at Vic Carucci Stadium.
I think there's a chair. There might be a chair there with, like, a nameplate or something that I have. I don't think they threw it away yet.
There should be.
All right, Matt, hit us.
All right, guys, we'll start with number five and Vic. I think there should be much more than just a chair there with your name on it. We start with number five. The only AFC North team playing this weekend other than the Browns is Cincinnati Bengals. They take on the San Diego Chargers. Guys, call your shot, Bengals Chargers.
Well, I'm going to say Chargers. I'm going to say Chargers. Bengals prove nothing to me. I mean, they look like a team that's still very beatable and very – they should be very concerned about having what would otherwise feel like a comfortable lead, except it shouldn't be that comfortable because they don't play that well.
I'm going to take the Bengals here. Coming off the bye, they should be fresh. You can throw the football on the San Diego Chargers. They don't have an answer for A.J. Green in that passing game. You also, of late, have been able to run the ball against them a little bit, so I think the combination of Bernard and Green Ellis will have some success. Ryan Matthews is a little bit banged up. Antonio Gates is a little bit banged up. So I like Phillip Rivers here, but I think with an opportunistic defense like Cincinnati, they will get a couple turnovers. That'll be the difference. I don't have them winning big. 24-20 Bengals over the Chargers.
All right, guys, question number four for you. A lot of talk so far, a little bit earlier today on Really Big Show, but I got to ask you guys, do you expect Alex Mack and TJ Ward to be back in Browns uniforms next year, both those guys at the end of their contract?
What do you think, Nathan?
Yes, I do. I think that those two guys are, I think to me, a big part of this season was the evaluation of which players are going to be the pillars around which this sustained success is built. And I believe T.J. Ward playing at a Pro Bowl level, still a young man, certainly has proven his value, his worth. And Alex Mack as the anchor of the offensive line, I would say yes. I think they need to address the offensive line, and by taking out a center who really is the quarterback of the line and allowing that hole to open up would just be a little bit too much, I think. So I believe, yes, both will be back, and they've got the money to ensure that both can be back and be here for a long time.
I'm inclined to say yes to that, but I'll tell you, it's a different route to get there. When you have players that are going to be, I think, pretty hot commodities in the open market, you try to prevent them from getting there, and you do that preemptively. You get that done before the season starts, or you have things well underway in the early part of the year. Obviously, that was not the case with either of those players, and I'll allow for the fact that the administration that did not bring these guys in needed to evaluate them, but it would be hard for me to imagine that both of these guys would not be on this football team, given that you use the word pillars. You've got to have foundation, and as much as there should be excitement over the newness that will be coming into this Browns team come May and throughout the free agent period, May's draft and the free agent period, you have to have foundational people, and you don't want to have to be addressing strong safety when you've got, I think, a Pro Bowl player there, and you don't want to be addressing center when you have one of the better ones in the league there. He's probably not going to make it to the Pro Bowl, I don't think, this year, but he is steady and consistent, and why create holes that you don't have?
Could you see one of those guys being tagged, maybe T.J. Ward, because the strong safety salary wouldn't be that high on a franchise tag, and then give another year to negotiate that deal?
I could easily see one of those two being tagged, yes. And that would, yes, because it would make the most sense. And you mentioned it too. The room that's under the cap gives this team the leeway to get something done.
Number three.
A lot of college football games going on this weekend, guys, and a lot of quarterbacks on the stage. Talking about the Browns, would you guys rather see a pocket passer like A.J. McCarron or Zach Mettenberger, or a mobile quarterback, say Marcus Mariota or Johnny Manziel? Which is a better fit for the Browns next year in the draft, a pocket passer or a mobile quarterback?
Well, number one, I want a guy who has a good pocket presence, even if he has mobility. Mobility is a bonus, is a plus. It is not the primary requirement, nor should it be, for really good quarterback play. I think we've got evidence of that in terms of RG3, who in 1 year has become a far less of a quarterback than he was as a rookie because he's lost that running dimension that allowed him to just be so incredibly explosive last year and run away from defenders. He's not able to do that. They're catching him. So what else has he got? Very little in the way of throwing the football accurately, effectively. And that's a big component that I want to see in my quarterback. That's got to be number one. I'm good with mobility, but I don't need it to be my number one quality. And here's the other thing. This offense is not going to be a gimmick sort of offense. It's not going to be the kind of thing where you're asking your quarterback to run a read option and all those buzzwords that we heard last year that have really kind of gone by the wayside. You don't see as much of that. And why? Because defenses pound the living crap out of quarterbacks who do a lot of running. So, and it's not the way North Turner's going to do things. Yeah, Rob Chudzinski did some of that with Cam Newton back in Carolina when he was coordinator there. There's some balance to it, to the talent. You can take advantage of some things the guy does with his ability to run, but it's secondary to being a really good thrower.
At the end of the day in the National Football League, you have to be able to win games from the pocket when it all comes down to it. So to me, obviously, if you can get a guy who's mobile and by you extend some drives by running for a first down here or there, that's fantastic. But ultimately, you need to be able to be a pocket passer, be successful. Look at North Turner. Had great success with Phillip Rivers, maybe the most immobile quarterback in the NFL. Troy Aikman, never considered a great runner, had a little bit of mobility, but wasn't a mobile quarterback either. You need a guy who can throw the ball when the game is on the line on third down from the pocket and be able to make plays from the pocket. So that is the number one skill that I'm looking for. Pocket presence, being able to make plays from the pocket, accurate delivery of the football, football intelligence, smarts, quickness, ability to get through their reads. And those are the most important things. I think that if you can get a guy who can do that and have some athleticism, there's nothing wrong with that either. That certainly will help.
Number two.
We'll stick with the quarterback, guys. We go to Sunday. Who will have more passing yards, Brandon Whedon or Chad Henne?
It should be Brandon Whedon against this Jacksonville Jaguars defense. Will it be? That I am not sure. I'll tell you this. This is a Browns team that should be able to stop this passing game because unlike some of the other teams we've talked about, Detroit, Green Bay, even Baltimore, even Pittsburgh, where they've got, you know, in Baltimore, you still have a Marlon Brown, you still have a Jacoby Jones, you've got a Dallas Clark, you still have other guys who have played, can play, and can make plays. Jacksonville doesn't have anyone proven on their team right now outside of Cecil Shorts. So it should be Brandon Whedon. On the season, the Jags give up about 253 yards passing per game. I think ultimately, though, it will be Chad Henne. I just feel a little bit better about Chad Henne and what quarterbacks have done against the Browns of late. Like I said, multiple passing scores in six straight. I also don't feel that this is going to be one of those games where a team is blowing the Browns out and then doesn't really pass in the second half. It will be a competitive game. I want to say it will be Brandon Whedon, but ultimately I think it'll be Chad Henne.
I'm going to say it probably will be Whedon. And I'm going to kind of, I don't want to give away my next point here when we call our shot, but it could be Whedon and not necessarily in a victory because I think we've seen this in games where, you know, you the losing quarterback, because they're behind, because they're trying to dig their way back into it. And unfortunately, this Browns team has a way, you know, of putting itself in these holes. But the other factor to me is Josh Gordon, is getting the ball in his hands and the amount of yards he's going to get, the rack he's going to get, the yards after catch he's going to get. I mean, he's just that kind of guy who is showing, at least in the last game, and I think in this game too, that his ability to make plays after the catch, he's found that groove. He's found that spot. And Cecil Shorts, while a dynamic player, is like the lone guy who's dynamic. And I think between Gordon, between Jordan Cameron, there's more ability to kind of get more yards. I just don't know if they're going to be productive kind of yards. We saw a record day from Josh Gordon, a record day of yardage and what was the result? Okay, so that's the part of me that holds back that says that Whedon could get more yards passing and win the game. I don't think that necessarily will play out that way.
Well, I think you make a good point, too, about the yards after the catch. Josh Gordon, fourth in the NFL, 7.4 yards after the catch per reception. Now, Jacksonville had some playmakers. Justin Blackmon, he's suspended for the year. Mike Brown stepped in and played very well. He's injured. So, really, it's a depleted wide receiver core. So, I think that you could be correct. You could be correct. I hope that the Browns don't need to throw it that much, but it certainly is feasible. They've got better weapons. And this is a game, we've said it every single week, and we'll say it again. Jordan Cameron needs to step up against this Jacksonville Jaguars defense. They have been absolutely dreadful against tight ends. Part of the reason is they're starting two rookies at safety. Take advantage of that. Please, Brandon Whedon. Please, Jordan Cameron. Take advantage of the inability for the Jaguars to cover tight ends. They've given up at least 69 yards receiving or a touchdown to a tight end in every single game since week two this season. The last three games, 77 yards and two touchdowns to the Titans tight ends, 117 yards to the Cardinals tight ends, and last week 69 yards on six catches to the Texans tight ends, and that was 69 out of basically 120 yards passing for Case Keenum. Tight ends have killed this defense. The Browns need to get that production from Jordan Cameron this week.
Number one.
All right, guys, Vic with a little tease there. Call your shot, Browns-Jacksonville, and what will be the key to victory?
Yeah, I'm going to make this really simple. I cannot pick the Browns to win a game until they can prove to me they can win a game. They've won one of their last six. One of their last six just isn't inspiring for me to say they can beat anybody, let alone a team that started the season 0-8. And, yeah, that's what the Jaguars did, and they were losing by double digits. And there were questions about how much effort they were giving. We heard that earlier in the week when Ryan O'Halloran was on our show a couple of days ago.
Talking about loafs.
Right? The loaf grades, bad loaf grades. Well, all of that is, I think, behind this Jaguars team. They won two of their last three. They're a better team on the road. We talked about Chad Henne, while not being great, can be at times solid and efficient. And I'm afraid the solid and efficient Henne shows up at First Energy Stadium and does just enough to beat this Browns team, even though I still think it's possible we'll see more yards from Brandon Whedon from a throwing perspective. So I can see this Jaguars team coming out of this with something like a 21-14 victory.
And I would absolutely love that. I know you would as well. To see the Browns prove us wrong. Because yes, the last couple of weeks, you and I have said the Browns would win. This week, you're going the other way. I am too, until Brandon Whedon can win a game as a starter, until this team can kind of get off the schneid. I see this being a game that is imminently winnable, though. I do feel that they have the requisite talent to win the game, but they need to take care of the football. They need to not make mistakes. This is a Jags team that just gave up only 6 points to the Houston Texans last week. They've won two of their last three. Both of their victories coming on the road. I have the Jags winning 17-16. There is, however, an easy path to victory for this Cleveland Browns team because, in theory, their defense should be able to win this game for them. But the defense has been a defense that has played great but has not been able to generate enough turnovers to be a difference maker in light of the offensive turnovers. Now, if the Browns offense didn't turn the ball over, the defense did more than enough against the Cincinnati Bengals 2 weeks ago. So I like them. I think they can get multiple sacks. I think they can generate turnovers, but I also think the Browns are going to give the ball back to the Jacksonville Jaguars in this game, and that is ultimately going to be what leads to the difference. Maurice Jones-Drew's ability to run the football late in the game, I think, could be the difference here. I have it 17-16 Jags, and a little bit of me is trying to put like a little reverse jinx on it, you know, to like if we both go negative, then we're going to get something positive.
I'm with you on that, yes.
So there it is.
That's it, guys.
We want to hear your shots, though. Don't be afraid to call your shots. 216-578-0850, 216-578-0850, or tweet the show at Browns_daily. It's a tough time right now because you want to be optimistic, but you want to have a reason to be optimistic. And right now, that's a little bit tough to come by, and I think that's reflected in both of the scores that you and I have laid out for this game.
Yes, that's exactly right. And, Matt, great stuff. We appreciate that. We are rolling along with CBD, this Call your Shot Friday edition. We want to hear from you, 216-578-0850, 216-578-0850. I know you're out there chasing bargains, but you're definitely going to have some time, I'm sure, to weigh in on this game. And, of course, tweet us at Browns_daily. So coming up in hour number two, we're going to have Jordan Cameron inside the locker room with Jameer Howerton. That's about 2:15. Doug Deacon from the PNC Bank, Cleveland Browns Radio Network, around 2:30. We'll get his thoughts on Sunday's game and also what took place yesterday. And still more to talk about, too, league-wide with the National Football League. We'll get into all of that as we approach week number 13, or the rest of week number 13. Vic Carucci, Nathan Zagura, you're listening to ESPN 850 WKNR.